ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 10 टेक्स्ट नंबर
27-29 If a human being is engaged in sinful religious activities, either because of bad association or because of his failure to control his senses, then such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desires. He thus becomes miserly toward others, greedy, and always anxious to exploit the bodies of women. When the mind is so polluted, one becomes violent and aggressive, and without the authority of Vedic injunctions, slaughters innocent animals for sense gratification. Worshipping ghosts and spirits, the bewildered person falls fully into the grip of unauthorized activities and thus goes to hell, where he receives a material body infected by the darkest mode of nature. In such a degraded body, he unfortunately continues to perform inauspicious activities that greatly increases his future unhappiness, and therefore he again accepts a similar material body. What possible happiness can there be for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death? Translation responsibility. If a human being is engaged in sinful irreligious activities, either because of bad association, or because of his failure to control his senses, then such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desires. He thus becomes miserly toward others, greedy and always anxious to exploit the bodies of women. When the mind is so polluted, one becomes violent and aggressive. And without the authority of Vedic injunctions, slaughters innocent animals for sense gratification. Worshipping ghosts and spirits, the bewildered person falls fully into the grip of unauthorized activities. And thus goes to hell. Where he receives a material body, infected by the darkest mode of nature. In such a degraded body, he unfortunately continues to perform inauspicious activities that greatly increases his future unhappiness. And therefore he again accepts a similar material body. What possible happiness can there be for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death? This is a purport by servants of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. Purport: in the Vedic analysis of civilized life, there are two paths. One who takes the path of Nirvritti Marg immediately renounces material sense gratification and purifies his existence by performance of austerity and devotional activities. On the path of Pravritti Marga, one furnishes a steady supply of sense objects to the senses. But one consumes such sense objects under strict regulations and through ritualistic ceremonies, thus gradually purifying the heart and satiating the material senses. Unfortunately, as explained in this and in the previous verse, the path of Pravritti Marga is extremely volatile because rather than becoming detached, the living entity often becomes uncontrolled and fully addicted to further sense gratification. In the previous verse, the path of regulated, authorized sense gratification was described, and in this verse, the path of unauthorized, demoniac sense gratification is described. In this verse, the words Sangha, Satan, Vijayendriya are very significant. One may fall down into sinful life by bad association, or even in good association, one may fail to control his senses. Ultimately, each living entity is responsible for his existential situation. The word Adharparataha in this verse indicates those who engage in excessive sex life, meat eating, drinking and other inauspicious activities that transgress the course of civilized human life. Being the mode of ignorance, these persons develop such a cruel mentality that they do not consider any festive occasion complete without the consumption of large quantities of meat obtained by slaughtering helpless animals. Eventually, such persons become influenced by ghosts and spirits who deprive them of all the ability to discriminate between right and wrong. Losing all sense of decency, they become fit candidates for entrance into the darkest mode of material existence. Sometimes
These lusty, intoxicated carnivores considered themselves pious, pray to God in a useless way. Afflicted by innumerable material desires, they rotate from one material body to another without experiencing true happiness. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has noted that material life is disturbing, that is so disturbing that even if one is allowed to live for an entire day of Brahma, approximately 864 million years, one will eventually be afflicted by the fear of death. In fact, Brahma himself is disturbed by fear of death. What to speak of tiny human beings who live a partly 70 or 80 years at most. Thus, as stated here, Kim Sukham Martya Dharminaha. What possible happiness can one find within the painful grip of material illusion?
ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदाङ्गिरं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरु वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातम् सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यमेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीशापान्वितांश्च. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पदे गोपेशा राधाकान्तस्ते तप्तकाञ्चनगौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रष्टाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने. नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशदारे. जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
हरे कृष्णा. दिस वर्स इज वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग बिकॉज दिस वर्स गिव्स ए वेरी क्लियर पिक्चर ऑफ द करंट सोसाइटी, the current civilization, what is going around. It starts from explaining how the material desires are developed due to different kinds of association and what are the end results of such desires, what activities are performed in such desires and what are the concomitant reactions to such activities. So if you see the whole process of desire, it is lying inside the mind. And we know mind, it is a repository of whatever thoughts, whatever activities we have done, whatever impressions we have obtained due to perceptions of different senses. So it is just like a bag full of so many different things. And we really don't know what is there in the mind. On the surface, we may know a few things. But if we go down, we really don't know. But it comes to surface as time passes. It is like an ocean. And if you consider an iceberg in an ocean, we can just see the tip of the iceberg. We can see everything according to the density of ice. I think one tenth
is shown out, I think. And rest, 90% is under the water. And it becomes completely, we act completely oblivious to the fact that there is something existing underneath our mind, maybe in the unconscious stage of our mind. And sometimes it can be very shocking when the very thoughts, which are quite destructive and quite disturbing, it comes to the surface. Then we start noticing, okay, there is so many things underneath. It is like when we start the process of devotional service, initially everybody is very happy because, you know, trying to give up all the sense gratificatory processes which are giving unhappiness, and getting the association of the devotees, giving up, you know, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, whatever, all the illicit sex, whatever nonsense we have, we try to give up and then try to get the association of the devotees. So initially when we start chanting Hare Krishna, everyone feels, you know, blissful, so wonderful experience. Chanting, dancing in kirtan, honoring wonderful prasadam. So everyone becomes happy. But as the chanting progresses, the stage is where we come to understand so many anarthas, so many nonsense which is present in our mind. So it just starts coming up. It's like, it's a whirlpool or what is that, you know, coming from the underwater, it starts and it just comes out and it comes to the surface. In the same way, in our mind, so many things start coming. Then we start thinking, why, what's wrong with the process? As an example can be given, if we are cleaning the house, you know, initially everything looks very nice. No problem. Maybe there may be some dust, but dust is not coming out. It's not creating any disturbance to us. Maybe a little bit, but not so much. But we take a broom and we start cleaning the whole house. So much dust comes. And, you know, we feel energetic. Oh, so much of dust is coming out. In the same way, in the process of devotional service, in the process of bhakti also, when we apply it through the process of devotional service, the initial reaction, the initial effect is that we come to know what are our anarthas. That too, step by step. It is said, at one stage, one anartha becomes very prominent. And after some time, apparently one can subdue that. It may come back later, but the next becomes more prominent. So in this way, it is like facing a mountain. When it goes right in front of a mountain, oh, it looks so big and it looks completely insurmountable. And if you cross over that mountain, nothing is finished. There's another mountain waiting. So this is the process of bhakti. That is, there are challenges in every stage. And we can see most of the challenges, it is from the subtle. It's in the subtle realm. Like, one may be able to give up all this nonsense externally. That is, it is, you know, one can externally give up, okay, meat eating, one can give up intoxication, one can give up illicit sex, okay. All these things we give up. However, when it comes to the subtle aspects of anartha, it becomes very difficult. Extremely difficult. So the gross thing can be given up easily, but the subtle things, it is more and more difficult. That is the nature. Now, if you analyze the whole existence, the material existence is based on desire. Everything is based on desire. It is like one time Shruta Kirti Prabhu was mentioning, one devotee wanted to ask a question to Prabhupada. So his idea was, I want to have some personal interaction with Srila Prabhupada. So this devotee went with Prabhupada and all his entourage for a morning walk. So I think the process was, they drove to some place and then they were walking around. So this devotee, he was walking along with Prabhupada, but he didn't ask any questions, though he wanted to ask one question. So because he wanted that personal interaction, one personal interaction at least with Srila Prabhupada. So they walked around and he didn't do anything. So his morning walk finished and he was about to get into the car. So one devotee opened the door and Srila Prabhupada just sat, you know, just kept and just sitting inside the car. So Suddenly this devotee asked a question. He asked, how can I become Krishna conscious? Mm-hmm. So it's a heavy question. It's not a light question. It is a grave question. It's a heavy question. How can I become Krishna conscious? So Prabhupada just looked at him and he just said, desire. Just desire that. So it shows everything is based on desire. Even in nectar devotion we can see from avidya, the root cause of all the problem is ignorance or avidya. So from avidya, the first thing that sprouts, that is desire. It is generally it's the sinful desire. However, it is said desire means any desire other than desiring Krishna. Everything else is it's a sinful desire. So in the tree, as is given in nectar devotion, everything is actually sinful in that sense. Because everything is just increasing the material existence. Whether it is sinful or pious, doesn't matter. So from that sinful desire, we can see the sinful activities come. So it is subtle to gross. That expansion we can see. That is sinful desires, and from sinful desires, the papam or the sinful activities are coming. And of course, if there are sinful activities, one has to pay the price. That is sinful reactions, as it is given in two stages, prarabdha and aprarabdha. First is in the aprarabdha stage where it is not manifested, then it gets manifested. And as we get reaction to that, again there is proclivity or kutam, again to perform sinful activities, which again perpetuates the sinful desire. So this cycle is continuing all the time. That is, we have sinful desire, we perform sinful activities, and one gets reaction to that. And the sinful activity in itself increases the proclivity to perform more sinful activities. It is like if somebody wants to commit a crime, it's very difficult. Initially, the first step, it is quite hard. One has to think, consider a devotee. One of us wants to smoke, for instance. Had this desire came about in the mind, I want to smoke. Initially, it will be very upright. You'll be thinking, anyone seeing? Any devotees are seeing around? Who is watching? You'll go to a corner, go to somewhere, who there is no vicinity of devotees. Then, maybe try one cigarette. Then, next time, he will get a little bit more confidence. He'll get a little bit more energy, more tendency, more proclivity to do the same sinful activity. Then it doesn't worry too much. And if he continues that process, then it doesn't care about the devotees, doesn't care about the sinful reaction, just goes on with the sinful activities. So this is the tendency, this is how the sinful activity in itself creates the desire and it increases more sinful activity itself. So it's a cycle, it's rotating. And this cycle increases our life in the material world. And here there are two analyses given. That is why this kind of sinful desires are coming. So one reason is, the prime reason is given association. Say if you consider bad association, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says bad association is like drinking poison. He gives a heavy example. He says it's just drinking poison. Because the term association itself is very subtle. The term is very subtle. It is not just physical proximity. If it is just the physical proximity, then devotees cannot go on work, devotees cannot travel in public transport, cannot go to city, cannot distribute books. These are all, there is physical proximity is only part of it. Whether if we take good association or bad association. The more to it comes when it comes in the level of heart to heart. That is, when we accept the values of a non-devotee, when we accept internally the values of a materialistic person, then that becomes real association. Then we are actually associating with non-devotees. When we try to accept the values. It means, when we accept the values, it means our desires are centered around those values. Means our actions are centered around those desires. So the values are causing the whole sinful activities or the materialistic activities. So one has to be very careful about the association. Same with the association with the devotees. That is, we have been staying in the same house. Two devotees. We are sleeping together, maybe eating together, whatever. So externally everything is associating very nicely. But if we don't take the values of the devotees, if we don't see the good qualities of the devotees, then that association doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not really associating. It is just, you know, being around. It's like one time I was listening to a lecture by Rasanath Maharaj. He was mentioning a very interesting time. He was mentioning our whole philosophy is about personalism. If we say everything is person, even the flute of Krishna is a person, if we say the garland, everything is conscious and everyone is individual and everyone is trying to serve Krishna. And the whole philosophy is completely about personalism. Everything, whatever you take, even Vishnu's different paraphernalia, Shankha, Chakra, etc., in Krishna's also, they are all different personalities. We can see they incarnated, or not incarnated, their partial expansions came in the past sense of Ramanujacharya. You know, different Arvas from South India, they are actually, many of them are expansions of different weapons of the Supreme Lord. You know, someone is an expansion of Shankha, someone of expansion of Chakra, like that. So we can see any paraphernalia or anything in association with the Supreme Lord is completely personal. So Maharaj mentioned, even though our philosophy is completely about personalism, devotees are sometimes impersonal. So it means, you know, we don't really associate with the devotees. So we're seeing every day together, you know, all these things are happening, but we don't really get the right association. We don't really share the values. We may not accept their realization. We may not act according to their instructions. So that can be detrimental to our spiritual life. Because if we don't really associate with the devotees, then what is left out? Because we have to associate with something. Nobody is a soul by its nature is active. It has to do something. It has to talk something. It has to hear something. It has to accept some values. It has to act on some values. So in all these circumstances, if we don't have that intimate connection, if we don't have that intimate relationship, heart to heart, with the devotees, then we are forced to accept association of the materialistic people. It will happen. And then our life moves in the other direction. Because we may have come, you know, maybe, you know, many devotees may have preached and, you know, we may have put so much of endeavor to come to the stage of devotion, come to the stage of chanting, you know, starting from chanting, chanting one round, then two rounds, eventually chanting 16 rounds. You know, then staying with the devotees, associating with the devotees. So we have put so much of effort, so much of time, at least to come to some stage of devotion. Even though it's near fail, even though it's beginning. But if we don't really associate with the devotees, then we are associated, we have to associate with the non-devotees. And eventually one has to, it's a U-turn. We are going straight, take a U-turn. Go in the opposite direction. So here, two points mentioned. One is bad association. Then second point is, even in good association, maybe we are with the devotees, we are in good association, but it is difficult to control the senses. It says, if you see Bhagavad Gita, one point is very, very, extremely important. It's just part of the verse. Sangha sanjayate kama. Kama, or the lust, the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna in all different ways, it is actually developing from Sangha, be associating. So if that association can be, in one sense, the association of the senses with the sense objects. And also it can be from, you know, likely-minded people. From that, or, you know, the non-devotees, that association, that Sangha can directly influence our heart. And it can directly influence our desires and later activities. So this is the senses. Senses create actually temptation. In the path of devotion, there are two things. One is obstacles are there, you know, stumbling blocks are there, which are obstacles in the path of devotion. And the senses has its temptation. It wants so many things. It desires for so many things. And when we are influenced by that, then we think there is nothing but we have to fulfill that. That is the whole purpose. If somebody develops, you know, it's very easy. If somebody just, it's a subtle example. If we like a song, a non-devotional song, because we have heard that so many times. So we know the lyrics, and when we hear, the scene will come. You know, it's like, you know, from nama, what is it? Guna, from name, form comes, then the qualities and activities develop. In the same way, when we have heard so many songs, and from that song, you know, the rupa will come, the pastimes will come. And if it's a film song, the pastimes will be running. It's a fact. So this is a subtle thing. But when that thought comes in our mind, we want to keep that thought. And we want to relish the tune and relish the pastimes, you know, the whole thing, you know, the whole thing comes in the mind. It's a very subtle thing. But you can see, straight comes, and we don't want to give that away. You know, we can cut that thought as soon as possible. It is the same principle in chanting. While chanting, what happens? Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Then the mind, where the mind goes? Mind goes to the place where we have attachments. So since we have so many material attachments, so the mind wants to linger. It wants to go to that place and be situated there as long as possible. So the one principle of chanting is one should cut that. That when one realizes that the mind is away, because often maybe after a few rounds one realizes, okay, I was not listening, or I was thinking about something else. It happens. So even the point where one understands that, okay, the mind is somewhere else, should cut and bring it back to the holy name. So that is a very, you know, the very basic principle of chanting. It is given in 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. A yogi, when he wanders, the mind is wandering, should bring it back. Very important in chanting. So in the same way, here we can see, even in good association, one have this temptation of the senses, and one may try to experience different, you know, different sense objects. And that creates a lot of problems. That is, here it is mentioned, what is the problem? It creates material desires within our heart. Such a powerful thing this desires are. Because from desire everything comes, whether spiritual or material. On the spiritual platform, the term used is lavalyam. Lavalyam. Lavalyam, mulam, kevalam, something like that. Lavalyam means the hankering, the intense desire to serve Krishna. So ultimately, one can develop devotion only through that desire. And that desire can only come through associating with devotees who have such kind of desire. Now, moving to the next point, here, in that desire, so initially it mentioned in this verse, so due to this association of these two kinds and the lack of sense control, one gets into material desires of so many different kinds, and from that desire, one starts performing sinful activities. One of the prime sinful activities mentioned here is killing of animals, slaughtering of animals and eating. The whole world, you know, most of the whole population is based on in animal killing and, you know, slaughtering and eating meat. India, you know, is supposed to be a pious country. India, meat eating is very, very prominent. India is one of the prime exporters of beef. So it's a big place for animal slaughter, the cow slaughter specifically. So we think, you know, India things are a little better. No, it's not better, it's worse. People have a knowledge. Even many political parties who were proclaiming to be representatives of Hinduism and so on and so forth, how they came in power, they ruled over for many years, how they couldn't stop this, or they couldn't do anything, literally. So this animal killing is done in such a organized and systematic way. When in the beginning of Kali Yuga, when the sages of Naimisharanya, when they heard that the organized slaughter of cows, they couldn't believe that. But now it is, you know, it's a common affair. And it is very nicely organized. The other day, yesterday, the day before yesterday, Anandita Prabhu was mentioning about KFC or McDonald's, I think, how they are well branded, you know, how the the daily transactions are being centrally reported, etc. And everything is managed so nicely so that the stoking can be done very, you know, in a very systematic and perfect way. So they use the whole technology, the whole system for animal slaughter. And people just go, they eat. Even somebody from a vegetarian background from their childhood, they come here associated with, you know, the normal, you know, the usual people, and they get into the whole bad habit. And as a result, one has to go through the sinful reaction. And another important thing mentioned is intoxication. Intoxication is, you know, it is such a big addiction. One time, or many times actually, my Guru Maharaj was mentioning why, and Prabhupada also is very interesting this point, mentioned why intoxication is required in this world. So, very nice point actually, why intoxication is required for this world. He mentions that is, the whole world is so miserable, the anxiety level is so high, the stress level is so high, so at the end of the week, to get some relaxation, to forget everything, one needs intoxication. There's no other way. Prabhupada also mentions this point, that is, in the chapter where he mentioned one should come to the mode of goodness. The whole society, Prabhupada mentioned, at least a fraction of the society should come to take up Krishna consciousness so that the whole society will be influenced. Prabhupada said, okay, it is good to have the whole society Krishna conscious, but Prabhupada mentioned at least a fraction of the society, a tiny fraction. If we take up Krishna consciousness, then there will be an influence to the whole society. It's not just the fraction will be getting influenced, but the whole society will be influenced. And that influence is, the misery will go away, because from the ignorance and passion, one can come to at least the mode of goodness. From that, one can avoid miseries. And if such sinful reactions are continuing, then eventually they get the body of ghosts and spirits. That is a reaction mentioned, the body of ghosts and spirits. So we may wonder if there, you know, the ghosts and spirits, whether they exist or not. Technically speaking, ghost is nothing but a living entity, a soul, without a gross body. So it has its mind, he has his mind, intelligence, false ego, but not the gross body. But he can't enjoy, because he has the desire, again the desire comes, he has the desire, the ghost has the desire to enjoy. However, since he doesn't have a gross body, he cannot actually fulfill his desire. So that is the reason sometimes people are affected by ghosts. It's a fact. Because they try to influence a person who has got a weak mind, and through that body he wants to enjoy. One time in, I think somewhere in London, a devotee mentioned there's one house which was haunted by ghosts. So Prabhupada mentioned, yes, that's right actually. He said, yeah, that house is haunted by ghosts. Prabhupada said, we'll go with our weapons. Prabhupada went and disabled, and a lot of devotees went, and they had a big kirtan. And after the kirtan, nothing, no more ghosts, nothing. Completely get rid of that. So ghosts exist. And if we perform sinful activities, this is the reaction that is given here, that is, a ghost body may not be very suitable for us. So, yeah. Now, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur mentioned, okay, suppose even if one gets the lifespan of the entire day of Brahma, so here the point is mentioning the temporary nature. Even if one tries to be happy by sense gratification, by all sort of intoxication, all these things, still, how long can one last? If you talk about intoxication, it is the Bhagavatam says, Tamodivyam putrakarena satram chutya yasma brahma saukhyam tu anandam. So, Tamodivyam, the whole purpose of human life is mentioned for Tamodivyam. To perform austerities in devotional service, by which one can purify the consciousness, and through that one can get happiness. So, Brahma Saukhyam, or if one wants real happiness, it's only possible if the consciousness can be purified. The amount of, that's a very important point, the amount, the level to which our consciousness is purified, to that level we can be happy. So Satvam Shuddhyet Yasmat. Satvam Shuddhyet means Satvam is our consciousness. Shuddhyet is purified. Yasmat, by which? Brahma Saukhyam. By which we can get the happiness, the spiritual happiness. And for that, the human form of life is given. And for that, one has to perform austerities in devotion service. These austerities are not so difficult. You know, it's just chanting, getting up early, chanting Hare Krishna, dancing in kirtan, taking prasad. These austerities are not so difficult. So just by performing these austerities of devotion service, one can purify the consciousness and eventually one can get the real spiritual happiness. It's like devotees are happy without intoxication. We don't intoxicate, but we are happy. We don't eat meat, still we are happy. Which clearly shows that our existence is not based on sense gratification, or the happiness is not based on sense gratification. Our existence is so, that's a live proof for everyone. That is, we derive happiness without doing the sinful activities. If one nicely engages oneself in the devotional activities, then one derives happiness, and it's a proof that we are the spiritual soul. And on the other side, you know, the non-devotees, they engross themselves in all kinds of sinful activities, still they don't derive any happiness, which actually proves that sense gratification cannot bring any lasting happiness. If you talk about the temporary nature of the world, there is a nice story you might have heard about Ramaharsha Muni. Ramaharsha Muni, by name, Ramaharsha means, you know, a lot of hair on his body. And his lifespan is just amazing. I think one hair from his body falls
one day of Brahma.
So that is given here. One day of Brahma is how much? Is 864 million or whatever. So it's a long period of time. So that is the longevity of Lomaharsha Muni. So he was sitting near the bank of Ganges, and he had many disciples. And by his nature, he was quite hairy. So his body was full of hair. And so you can imagine how much lifespan he had. And his disciples told one day, okay, we will create a hut for you so that you don't have to perform all this tapasya, all this austerities, just sitting, you know, the sun is on head, you know, raining, all the seasons are changing. So why do you have to suffer like this? We will have a nice hut for you, a small one. So you can be comfortable there. So Ramaharsha Muni, he said, what's the point? I don't want this because the life is temporary. That was the realization of Ramaharsha Muni. His realization said that he has got such a big lifespan, still he's telling, it is so temporary, so I don't want this. So he continued his tapasya on the banks of Ganges without caring for any material comfort like that. So the final question raised here is, even the last point of translation is, what possible happiness can there be for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death? So, whatever happiness we are trying to derive by some gratification, it is going to end when his body ends. So, how much lasting happiness one can derive? How much? Zero, nothing. Lasting happiness, nothing. Nothing we can get out of this. So ultimately, one has to purify this material desire in the association of devotees and has to perform devotional service. That can actually take away the hard knot in our heart. Because if we see, even if we try to focus on Krishna, there are quite a few things within our heart which is not allowing us to really think about Krishna. When we try to chant, you know, there are difficulties. There are some obstacles within our heart, even if we consider, if we avoid what external things, still within our heart there are so many hard knots, as it is said. Why the term hard knot is used? Because if you are tied to something, then you cannot come out. You know, it's just tied. You know, it's like apparently there is no way out. It says karmashyam grajitam. Grajitam means which is tied. The karmashyam, the hard knot in the heart, which doesn't allow us to take shelter of Krishna in different levels. So, Bhaktira Samasindhu actually mentions, actually quotes a verse from Bhagavatam, and it says, how this hard knot, actually it is completely, that hard knot is completely uprooted, the whole thing is removed.
said, yad pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashyam grahitam udgradhyanti santa. That is why worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna, one can actually remove this heart, you can just uproot whatever nonsense which is deep within our heart. It can just by the process of bhakti, we can actually remove. So means we have to take nice darshan of the deities. We have to see them. They are physically present. So we have to see them. We have to see the lotus feet. It said, yat pada pankaja palasa. So we have to accept. We have to see lively what is the pada pankaja, the lotus feet of the Lord. And we had to engage ourselves in the process of devotional service. Then these heart knots within our heart will grow, and both subtle and the gross reactions will go away. That's always wondering, what is the sequence? I was thinking, that's actually nicely explained. What is the sequence in which this reaction goes away? Because if we perform sinful activities, the concomitant reactions are there. And when we engage in bhakti, these reactions are removed. Of course, we say the reactions are removed. Then how, in what sequence it goes? It is mentioned, first the papa, when we engage in bhakti, the nonsense activities first goes away, along with some part of ignorance. Then, when the nonsense activities goes, then the next thing that it goes is aprarabdha. The stored reactions that start getting burned. So whatever we are supposed to suffer, that will go away just by the process of bhakti. Then the proclivity will go away. Proclivity is not bija, it's kutam. And finally, bija will go, along with the complete ignorance. And ultimately, and the last thing that will go is the prarabdha. Because prarabdha are meant for us to suffer in this lifetime. So even if we perform bhakti, still, the prarabdha can remain. Prarabdha is difficult to go, because whatever suffering is meant for this life, it can remain. But Srila Prabhupada mentioned, it's a very important point, that is, for devotees who is completely engaged in the devotional service, there is the prarabdha, the manifesting sinful reaction, it's not just a sinful reaction. But Krishna is actually using our reaction, so our sinful reaction, to purify us. So there is a huge difference between a non-devotee who is going through his prarabdha karma and a devotee who is going through his prarabdha karma. Because at the end of prarabdha karma, when a devotee goes through, he gets purified. Because Krishna uses that prarabdha karma for the purification of that devotee. Whereas for non-devotee, it is just, he is giving up his prarabdha, he is generating further karma, and he is just moving on in his simple life. That's all. So that is very important. So that is the reason a devotee, it says, the tathaini kambam susumikshamano, that is, a devotee, he becomes thankful to Krishna to burning his sinful reaction, because he has to go through. He becomes thankful. Okay, I am getting this reaction, so I have to go through this. So that, now ultimately, I can get the mercy of Krishna and I can become completely purified from this reaction. So that is the nature of a devotee. So this devotion can ultimately come from nicely associating with nice devotees. And to summary, the nice association means to have heart-to-heart relationship, to get their values, to see how nicely they are performing devotional service, and see how we can improve that, our devotion and our devotional service. So through that, we can really associate with the devotees, and then we can derive the benefit. So I think I stop here. See any comments or questions? Yes, sir.
Just a comment about reading. The dog just gives me this movie so much. I have opened up 1,000 pheasants around the world.
Yeah. Even in India. Sorry? Even in India, they are offering so many.
Right.
Yeah. Right. They are. Yes, sir. Yes.
On
Yeah, it's not the worst, but it's not the best. The chanting is meant to, we are supposed to hear the holy name, because from the holy name everything else will come eventually. So if we meditate on the service, the problem is if we forcefully try to, naturally if we try to meditate on the service, sometimes it starts from the service, devotional service, and then it goes to somewhere else. The beginning point can be devotional service, but it doesn't end there. It goes to so many stories and so on in between. So one has to be very careful. So it's better to bring it back to chanting. Yeah. And I have seen some devotees, when they have some thoughts come, they take a paper and they start writing. But I was thinking, if you start writing, then there will be essays, I don't write much. I have seen some devotees, when some thoughts come, they say, okay, write it like that, and they keep chanting again. I don't do that because it will be a problem. So better to focus on, or the real way is to focus on the holy name. And we can really see improvement in our consciousness if we just focus on the holy name, chanting. If we really nicely listen, and if we continue that every day, we can see there is some improvement in the consciousness. It's not it's not just a story, or even if they just said like that. No, everyone can see. The time period, if you say 1 month, if you had a nice chanting for a month, or a few weeks or a few days, we can see that time how consciousness is much better. We can even better do devotional service, we can do reading properly, that's one side. On the other side, if we have nice reading, it helps our chanting too. If you read nicely Bhagavatam, taking reasonable time, 1 hour, like that, 1 hour, 2 hours, then we can see how the chanting is getting better. So it is a mutual. Yes, bro.
Just in regards to what you said, Prabhupada actually mentions in the method of instruction that one way to control the mind is to think of how to expand Krishna consciousness. So, in some ways, it is actually bonafide if one is thinking of how to preach, how to expand Krishna consciousness, even if it comes to the mind. Because ultimately, when we chant Hare Krishna, we're praying to completely be engaged in devotional service. So, it's like a constant.
Yeah, that's right. But we don't allocate our chanting time for thinking about service or planning process, then we are actually deviating from the process of chanting. We don't allocate half an hour and doing rounds, okay, this time I will think about how to, but it naturally comes, maybe it can come and go, but otherwise we don't really meditate. The other point is about controlling the mind, thinking about service, it can be done other times, When we are doing a particular service, it is good to think about how to improve what I am doing now. So that is one very good way to engage our mind, to be focused on the service as well as to improve that service. So that is actually thinking about Krishna. If you are trying to think about how to improve the service, what I am doing, that is actually thinking about Krishna. Literally, we may not be thinking about the holy name, or literally we may not be thinking about the form of the Lord or past name or anything. But when you try to think about how to improve the service, that is thinking about Krishna. I think that is, but not exactly why. But Prabhupada mentioned one time, I think a devotee complained, I am while chanting all this time, the service, that's the only thing coming all the time. Prabhupada mentioned it was, I think in Bombay, the construction was going on, so Prabhupada said, in my mind also it is coming. Like that Prabhupada mentioned. So it can come, but it shouldn't be our meditation, while chanting at least, because we have to listen to the holy name. And if it is in an advanced state where one can listen to holy name while thinking about service, or thinking about the form of the Lord, that's an advanced state. That is fine, because they are not deviating from the listening process of holy name. Because listening we cannot avoid. So that is the prime point. So the other part, advanced state, is one can come to that state. That's my understanding. Yes, Prabhu.
And you said chanting is improving our consciousness. Not only that, it can even dissolve in certain body.
Yes.
And you can go to spiritual state. The thing, the problem is that we are following shadow. The real happiness is the spiritual world. Because we are following the shadow. If we are following the shadow, how can we be happy? Impossible. That's why Prabhupada says that because we are pure spiritual, so we cannot be happy ever in the material world. So the only way one can say is chanting, and the most powerful thing, chanting and eating.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Grandha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.